Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us. We switch gears now and we'll start talking about rail safety issues in Wisconsin with our Commissioner of Railroads, Rodney Croonan. Rodney, it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio today.
Well, I'm glad I could be back again. A lot of things have happened since we've talked last.
One of the things that I was curious about was that about a month ago, an Amtrak train slammed into the back of a freight train on Chicago's south side. Many of the people aboard the train were sent to the hospital, but no one was killed. The front of the Amtrak train, which had three passenger cars, came to rest atop the freight train, rising above the track at an angle. The cameras captured the collision, and have they decided what caused this to occur?
I'm told by the safety people at Amtrak, it looks like the engineer did not properly observe a trackside signal. They were coming from Michigan. It was the Pierre Marquette, and he had slowed going through a junction, was in the process of speeding up, and the lights had indicated he should have caution. But what that does is that, I think, highlights the congestion problem we have in the Chicago area.
Mm-hmm.
Of how do you move so many trains efficiently through things, because it climbed up in the back of a Norfolk and Western container train. But if you're going to be in an accident, there's a place to be, and that's in a passenger train near Cocoon of Steel. But things like that greatly damage the rail industry's reputation for high safety.
If people have questions about rail safety issues, then just give us a call. In Madison, the number is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And our email address, of course, is talk@wpr.org. And we'll take your calls. Rodney, why do trains with only a few cars sometimes stop in the middle of an at-grade crossing, reverse a short distance, and then move forward again?
That's a question I used to ask 50 years ago. Okay, it's usually a switching movement. They're going through another turnout, or in many cases with old-type signalization, they neared to clear the block, as the term would go, to get the signals to change. Now, to alleviate that issue on the larger main lines, we have pretty well helped fund constant warning time, which measures the speed, the placement of the train. So if the train comes up close to the intersection, the mm-hmm. gates drop, and it's not moving, it will then time out. Now, the real question here in Madison that we have no input on, it seems, is why are they always rushing trains through at rush hours, blocking East Washington Avenue in the morning? Now, if this was Chicago, I could see a need because of the density. But we've been talking with the Wisconsin Southern to see if they can't do some scheduling to stay away from that heavy movement, because that is their connection mm-hmm. from the east side to the west side, and it's very aggravating to the public.
So there are no set rules for when trains can operate over at-grade crossings?
No. That's governed strictly by the FRA, which is governed by track conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So we as the public, as the term would go, are held hostage in many cases.
Rodney, let's take some calls. We'll start with John in Milwaukee. Hi, John. What's on your mind today?
Walking near Menominee Falls and Mequon.
Yes.
And there's an intersection in Milwaukee that, from what I'm told, we called the Department of Transportation. They said at the railway, the section is owned by Burlington Northern.
And that would not be in the Milwaukee area. The Burlington Northern's only trackage in the state comes in at Prescott, comes down the river through La Crosse and Prairie du Chien and out at East Dubuque.
Okay.
Most of that is owned either by the Canadian National, the old Milwaukee Road, or by the state, which is operated by the Wisconsin and Southern.
Okay. And so the issue is that there's a gate. There's no gate at this intersection where the rail comes through, and it's a really, really busy intersection. It's really easy for somebody to ride through it and possibly get hit by a train.
Well, this is a problem we have throughout the state, and it's called LACO checkbook. All right, the federal law prescribes the fact that our office, Office of the Commissioner of Railroads, should use their federal and state funds to signalize these crossings. Because the amount of money we get a year, $2.7 million federal, $1.7 million state, thank you, Tommy Thompson, we used to get almost nothing statewide, so we pay the local share with that. We then prioritize where we're going to improve things, and we're spending an average of at least $150,000 per crossing to upgrade or to signalize what we'd call passive crossings. We're down to 4,117 crossings. Almost 2,000 are signalized. Of those, 1,200 have obsolete signals from the 60s and the 50s. So as I'm around the state looking at different crossings, we have to balance everything. Now, how do we balance it? We look at the amount of trains, the number of cars, vehicles. That's called ADT, average daily traffic. And we come up with a factor on that, the two multiplied together. Now, in that case, that track probably has four trains a day, and maybe there's 10,000 cars. It could even be more. So that's a 40,000 exposure factor. We will then get into areas, let's say on the Canadian National, which is the old Soo Line in Wisconsin Central, where we'll have county trunks with 20,000 cars and 30 trains a day. We're at 600,000. Guess who gets the attention?
Yeah,
so it's a balance. And the other thing we then factor in separately, my staff calls it CGR, Commissioner's Gut Reaction. I factor in train speed, number of school buses, petroleum trucks. That means, do we have propane like in rural areas? Would it be a fuel oil truck? Is the crossing askewed? Because the more angular it is, particularly less than 45 degrees, you have vision problems. And we have one that we're working on that it looks like they're going to come to terms not too far from there, called Colgate Road. That has 30 trains a day. It's a 17-degree angle, very bad visibility. So all these things are juggled in. And many times we'll have a community that says, I would like help. They'll step forward and may pay $40,000 or $50,000. And I realized with the pressed local budgets, that's not too common. Mm-hmm. By the way, that helps them also get to the cherished quiet zone. It's a very difficult balance. I was over there with my helper, Shannon, in Germantown, and that used to have 2 to 4 trains a day. It's now 4 to 6 in that state-owned trackage, but it's the WSOR's major connection into Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And the Canadian National also has trackage rights on that. So we're trying to work out a program now with Germantown where they're going to chip in, and that will help them with the quiet zone. But basically, our agency, like every state agency, has to so carefully parcel out what limited funds they have. And I always have to ask the question, where do I get the best safety for the dollar? But when you as the public see some things, we want you to contact our office, because there could be these extra supplemental issues that come up. And I ride with the crews. They want us to ride all the time. I just run out of time. But they tell us. They're out there every day. And they see that crossing every day. And they see what people's habits are. Their thoughts are very important. They're on the war front.
Will you be issuing a new list of crossings for 2008 that you plan to signalize?
Well, we do this on a continuous basis. We keep adding to it. We have an internal list that I consider a public document, mm-hmm. that we have already assigned the public funding to, and we're very happy to publish that. Anybody that would want that, if they want to leave a note at 261-8221.
Area 608.
Yeah, Area 608-261-8221. We'll give you our current list. The projected list for 09, now we're into the 08 funding. You know, in the state, that starts the 1st of July.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working through that.
Okay. John, thanks for the call, and I hope that that was a good answer for you. Let's go next to Patrick in Judah. Hello, Patrick. What's on your mind today?
This is Nellie, Jim.
Yes. Well, Nellie, how are you today?
I'm pretty good.
In Russ County there.
Yeah. I wanted to ask him, there's a rumor going around that the Wisconsin Central is going to rip up the old Soo Line tracks going east.
Well, now, Rust County, that's where one of my favorite cities is, Ladysmith. I'm
yeah.
there 3 to 4 times a year. Very vibrant area. It's the hub of economic activity. What she's referring to, at one time, the original Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Sault Ste. Marie line came across Canada, entered at the Sioux, went across northern Upper Michigan, through Wisconsin, and to the Twin Cities. And that's where most of the Scandinavian people that live in the Twin Cities, their heritage dates to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the Wisconsin Central purchased that Sioux line, like many lines, it had deferred maintenance, so they chose to start cutting it up. In this case, I think about what, west of Bruce or Weyerhaeuser, to the Twin Cities. So they wouldn't have to keep up the track. That means they would have to fundle it lower. Now let's come to the segment that runs from Ladysmith, goes over to Prentice, goes to Rhinelander, Crandon, and then up to Escanaba. By the way, Escanaba, if it's not the end of the world, Jim, you can stand there. It's just over the hill there. Has very little traffic. During the winter, they run the ore train. But outside of that, during the summer, we see no traffic on that track east of Rhinelander. And there's the part of the line that goes all the way up to the White Pine Mine and up to Bayfield.
Got about 30 seconds.
Yes. In any case, we do not see that line being abandoned. I have talked to Governor Doyle about putting a commission together with the state of Michigan. I think the state's going to have to end up purchasing that and putting an effort to redevelop it. It's too precious a piece of track for northern Wisconsin development.
Nellie, thank you very much for the call. And Patrick, if you'll stay with us, we will be checking out the news and we'll be talking with you right after the news. We're talking about rail safety issues in Wisconsin with Rodney Cronin, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Rails. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, we are toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you with us today on this day after Christmas. We're talking about rail safety issues in Wisconsin with our Commissioner of Railroads, Rodney Cronin. And Rodney, it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio once again.
Well, thank you, Jim. Always good to be here and relate to our friends around the state.
And I promised Patrick and Judah that he would be next. So, Patrick, go ahead.
Yeah. I was wondering about exempt signs on railroad crossings, what that actually means.
Okay, there's a state law that requires school buses and those with hazardous materials, like gasoline tankers and that, to stop before every railroad crossing and to look both ways and then take off. Where we have fully signalized crossings, we then will go through a hearing, have all the input, and generally will remove the exempt sign. That falls to my discretion. If you have a passive crossing, we don't remove them. But that's a very good question.
I thought it had to do with how much rail traffic was on the railway as well.
That's a factor that I take into account. Now, where you are in Judah, that line, as you know, 7-8 years ago, was almost near a terminal death until Badger Ethanol put their plant on the far west side of Monroe. Now that's come alive, and they have 4 to 5 ethanol trains a week, well, in and then back out. So our concerns there are very high. Have we had people hit the ethanol train? 3 documented cases and 2 that were not. So we don't want any problem. I've been into Judah many times. You're in a wonderful little area. You're still in Greene County there, aren't you?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And not too far from Broadhead, very proud community. And Shannon and I have worked all the crossings on that line, and we hope to start updating more of those.
Okay.
But as I mentioned earlier, it's called LACO Checkbook.
Patrick, thanks a lot for the call and for the question. Doug in Oshkosh is next. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Rodney and Jim. Nice to talk to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, Rodney is a heck of a sailor, but the only thing he talks about on a sailboat is trains.
Yes.
Personal experience.
The only thing he talks about at mealtime is trains.
Yeah, it's trains, I know. Rodney, quick question. First of all, it's good to talk to you again. And why at a rail crossing, you know, the thing goes down, whatever it is, the protection
the gate.
And the cars are, like, you know, right there within a couple feet of that, you know, whatever it is, the marker that goes down. Why isn't the thing back, like, 20, 30 feet? Because if a trail, God forbid, a train would run off the track or some log would fall off or something. You would think that you'd move it back another 20, 30 feet and have the
problem there. Well, one, the federal regulations require its present location, and the number of times that trains run off the track like this are highly infrequent, and we have another major problem. Communities developed around the railroad. Speeds were slower then. Things are so close, you'd have traffic backups that were terrible. Where we're going to quiet zones, and the municipality will put these quick curbs in place of a median strip. The FRA likes to have 100 foot. Most cases, they have to settle for 40 or 50. It's a space configuration and change.
Oh, I have great respect for trains, and I stay back 20, 30 feet. I mean,
well,
get beeped at once
it's
in a
good
while.
To have a little bit of caution. And where you are, most of your, and you're in a very busy area there, and a lot faster than when we've been on the sailboat, Doug. maybe not quite as enjoyable. But by the way, I just thought this morning, 6 months from now, we start the sailing season in Door County.
Yep.
But when we are in busy routes, like with Amtrak through Oconomowoc, that's 79 miles an hour. Boy. That's and when you're close to the train, like 6 or 8 foot away from it, you feel the air blast.
Mm-hmm.
But people should be alert. When there are lights and there are gates, that means great caution.
Thanks very much, Doug, for the question. And if you'd like to join in, we have a line open for you. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Robert in Milwaukee is next. Hello, Robert.
Hello, and I'd like to thank Mr. Kreinen for being on the radio regularly. You make the railroad information so interesting. I think you should write a book about the geography of the Wisconsin railroads and the history and all the some of the interesting stories you bring forth.
Well, it's an interesting, fascinating industry, and many historians have tackled that. It could be a lifetime project. I've been around the issue 50 years, and I think we all recognize the railroads built Wisconsin.
I've got a comment, and it's not directly related to railroads, but there's a proposal for the Wisconsin Department of Transportation to spend $1.9 billion, that's billion, to work on 35 miles of the I-94 corridor between the Illinois border and Milwaukee. It's to make three lanes into four lanes and generally rebuild it. Now, I'm wondering, and by the way, there's information about this at a website called southeastfreeways.org, S-E-freeways, all one word, .org, and the public can make comments until December 31st. There seems to be a big push for this. There's even a newsletter called Corridor Communications put out by the Department of Transportation. But my question and comment and ask request for you to make a comment is, what would $1.9 billion do for rail transportation to enhance safety and speed? And that's something that we should look at, being that every gallon of gas burned puts out 19 to 20 pounds of carbon dioxide.
Well, let's give Rodney a chance to answer the question.
Well, we're familiar with that proposal, and I drive it often as we're working Racine and Kenosha, and there's a very active group over there working on KRM, the extension of the rail from Kenosha to Racine to Milwaukee, and that's picking up speed. As yet, the priorities for transportation like that, and I think that's an excellent program, have not been able to counter the thrust of the road builders and what they want to do. What would $1.9 billion do? I argue with a railroad over $2,000 and $3,000 on crossing changes in that. I couldn't even imagine.
You'd be a kid in a candy store then if that were the case.
That's right. We believe that the Milwaukee to Madison and the biggest upgrades coming from Watertown to Waterloo to Marshall, Sun Prairie to Madison could be upgraded and put us in very good shape for $75 million. But as yet, we're still just talking about energy.
We
haven't done anything about it. By the way, we came here on ethanol, E85. I haven't used gas for a year. But the public has to speak. And you need to speak to your state reps. You need to speak to your state senator. You need to speak to the governor. And in fact, our former governor Thompson called me before Thanksgiving. We talked about some things, and one of his questions went, "Rodney, do you have the train running from Madison back to Milwaukee?" And I jokingly said, "You know, I have no control over it." "Yeah, but we're expecting you to lead the thrust." And he says, "What's holding things up?" And I said, "You packed out of here in 2001, buddy, and went to Washington. That's what happened."
Robert, thanks very much for the question and the call. And let's go to Jack next in Waukesha.
Hi. The other day I was on the Waukesha City bus, and we were stopped by a train crossing the street. And the driver was grousing about how the train had tied up the intersection for a lot longer time than he was allowed to by regulation or law. I'm wondering what those limits might be.
Well, our state statute says they cannot block a crossing for more than 10 minutes. That means standing still. When the ICC was phased out and the Surface Transportation Board came in, there was a clause in there that moved regulation to Washington. All right, our Fond du Lac district attorney, because we have a lot of blockage north of Fond du Lac, cited the railroad in several cases. The railroad sent what we would say is a Philadelphia lawyer with his 3-inch stack of briefs to Fond du Lac County several years back, and the case was dismissed. I am powerless to enforce the Wisconsin law that's on the books. Now, in all due respect to the railroad, the Canadian National, which is a very efficient railroad, that doesn't mean that I don't have weekly spats with them over things, but a very good railroad, they're running 28 to 30 to 32 trains a day through Waukesha. Their track's been substantially upgraded, but with that curve, they don't go over 35 miles an hour. It's a case of putting so much rail traffic through there, we're going to have some blockages. Now, in downtown Waukesha, one of the longer-range projects we've been working on is at Moreland Road, which is Highway 18. It's been determined that the railroad will be lifted, and the highway will go underneath. So that will become the main artery for police, fire, and EMS. I don't think all the funding has been put together on that, but I know Sensenbrenner's been involved, two chief engineers. We've been on this for 10 years, but it's accelerated to close to a $30 million project.
Let me ask you what the FRA restriction on sitting still on that crossing is then. You said that Wisconsin was 10 minutes. Is there a...
There is none.
There is no national standard?
No.
It's
relatively ambiguous, as I've had it read to me, where they couldn't decide to park a train there overnight. But if it's in operation, particularly if they can show if there were brake problems or other safety problems, and that occasionally happens.
Mm-hmm. So that's the answer. Jack,
not what you want to hear, but Waukesha, boy, you're a busy sissy city, and that's a wonderful city over there.
Jack, thanks for the call, and let's go to Brian next in Eau Claire. Brian, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was wondering if our guest could tell us, you know, what some of the factors are, like the economic and capitalistic factors that are stopping more public transportation on the rails.
Well, okay, for one, let's understand that nobody makes money carrying people. The airlines are just learning that, by the way. They're learning what the railroads learned in the early 50s. So we need to have a public involvement, meaning the public checkbook. In Europe, after World War II, for many reasons, cost of petroleum and things, they decided that the governments would be heavily involved in developing their rail passenger networks. We also help them through the Marshall system. And Jim and I are of an age, though we wouldn't want to admit it, where we can recall filling the tank in our, at least in my motorcycle, 5 gallons for a dollar.
That's before my time, Rodney.
Before your time, okay. The first time I was in England in the spring of 58, I recall paying a hideous 78 cents a gallon for gas. All right, so to fund all of this and other social projects in Europe, they have a very stiff tax on petroleum to discourage use. Everybody has gotten to the point where they accept that. Right now, I'm told in Germany, it's 7.10 to 7.20
a gallon.
They have developed a very good network, and their latest move is so the networks interface between nations. That occurred last year. So they have all the technological needs to run these high-speed trains from Germany into France, and it's happening with others. As yet, that has not been important to us. And no matter what administration we've had since the end of World War II, Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative, nobody has ever had a cohesive transportation policy yet. Eisenhower in the mid-50s chose to build the interstate highway system. In fact, that's when I met your dad, Jim, when he was in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in college working on different things. We gave all of our preference towards an interstate system, which has been wonderful. But in the meantime, we have a very efficient freight system, much more efficient than we have in Europe. And the latest thing with our freight system is containerization, like the trailer off of a semi-truck without wheels. This is steadily expanding, 6 to 8% per year. They now have intermodal with trucks, but what's happened, the capacity has been taking up on most of these rails. When you and I first started doing broadcasts 30 years ago, I would have never have told you we'd run out of rail capacity, but we have now. So to reverse trends to get more rail passenger service onto these tracks is going to be very difficult. It is going to take a national commitment on key corridors, and that's where the success is. In Wisconsin, the key corridor is Milwaukee to Chicago. The big one that's been picked out is from Chicago to St. Louis, and they're moving the speeds up there. But there is no simple answer, but the checkbook is going to be mammoth. Right now, think of it, everybody seems tolerating $3 a gallon gasoline. Traffic World just reports that next year the big boys, DHL, UPS, FedEx, and the truckers are planning on $3.75 to $4 a gallon diesel fuel. Will we be satisfied with $3.50 a dollar gasoline? And for me, that means we might be paying $2.50 for ethanol. But nothing's going to happen very quick. But the public has to speak.
Brian, thanks for the call, and let's move on to Troy in Ladysmith. Hello, Troy.
Hello. I'm calling about the railway that goes through Ladysmith there. I've noticed, like, from Sheldon, they've started to rebuild some of their bridges over top of the small streams, and they've doubled up, proposed, I'm guessing, for a double track there. I was wondering what the if or when that's going to be doubling all the way through, or is it just going to be kind of a holding track as it's used for now?
Well, I don't see it as a holding track, but what we do see, let's look at the history. That was the old Soo Line that came out of Superior, head of the lake, South Itasca. That was the last major railroad built in the state, 1882 to 1889. And contrary to what my children and nieces will tell you, I was not there to watch that being built. All right. So it had the least desirable route from the head of the lakes. In 1987, the Soo Line who had purchased the Milwaukee Road, then sold it to the Wisconsin Central, a new railroad put together by Jim Powers, Ed Burkhart, and Dick Ogilvie, and have turned it into a powerhouse. Now, remember, this is all their own money. So starting in the early 90s, then accelerating in the late 90s, they started expanding their passing tracks from 5,000 or 5,500 foot to 10,000. They're going to add several more this year. That's their way of double tracking. All the switches are powered switches. They're controlled out of Stevens Point. There is a siding at Sheldon. I can picture it well. And right above you, are, of course, is Conrath. And below there is the fine little community of Gilman. And Lublin, you're on a very busy railroad. So the question is, how do we move, or how do they, the Canadian National, move more traffic? And it's spacing 10,000-foot sidings. Now, the reason they pick out 10,000-foot, that should hold a normal 140-car northbound train, which is mainly empties. But before Greg Guthrie retired a year ago, he said, assuming we owe the land, in most cases they do, to construct a 10,000-foot siding now with turnouts and electronics has gone from about $2.2 million to over $3 million. This is big capital money, so they space these out very carefully. So you're going to continue to see lots of trains up there, and it's going to be heavier. But, God, you've got a wonderful area to live in up there. The people we've dealt with in Rusk County have sure been very cooperative. When they had all the blockages last year, as you recall, and the public might find this of interest, when you get into cold weather, below zero, you cannot run 10,000-foot trains, the air leakage, the brakes drag, etc. So they started changing at Sheldon. Maybe you recall that.
Yep.
And when the trains were late, I would get a call from the sheriff. That could be at 6:15, 6:45 in the morning. Uncle Rodney, what are we going to do about it? By the way, my statutory powers on that are zero. But they then went to changing crews. So the crews out of Superior would get out of the train, get into the other train, and that would they could usually do it in 2 to 3 minutes. And then one would go back to Stevens Point, the other would go back. And it made things work a lot more efficiently because they were short on crews. Will that happen again this year? I think you could almost bank on it. Where the problem came was when we had that one in, what, the 9th of January that was 9 minutes early, the other was 6 minutes late, and the school bus and the ambulance set. Is that Highway 195 right there?
194.
See what happens to an aging memory, Jim?
You slipped by 1 degree.
1 degree. But it's going to get busier.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All right, Troy. Thanks very much. So we've got a shortage of crews. Last year we had a shortage of cars. Is that shortage of cars going to occur again this year?
We believe it is. It occurs on grain on many railroads. The car builders have a backlog, I'm told, of well over 10,000 cars. We never used to have that. Their biggest quantity of cars they're building now are for carrying containers. And there's a point of interest. The big container is 53 foot, like you see the truck.
Mm-hmm.
So the opening in the container train is 53 foot, 2 inches. They have crane operators that are very skilled. So the double stack, then they because these are relatively lightweight in railroad terms, they'll have five together. They're called a five-pack. Then they only have to have six trucks. Part of the economic push, and they're all geared so they can run them in. They could run them at 80 miles an hour, but much above 60, the wind resistance in there, it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the transportation of hazardous materials. Is that a concern, a greater concern each year to you?
No. The railroad's record on moving hazardous materials is very good. Tank cars are doubled tanked. So even when those are tipped over, the chance of a rupture or problem are minimal. If there's a way to move hazardous materials, it's by rail. And it's a commodity, whether we're talking fertilizers, anhydrous ammonia, chlorine, other industrial chemicals, they're part of our life.
Is there a training session that goes on continually to keep these to keep the railroads updated on safety issues?
Well, it's really between the railroads, the FRA, and many local areas where heavy quantities of hazmats go through. They work with the fire departments, police departments, and that. Yes, that's ongoing.
So there's an ongoing evacuation plan, that sort of thing.
Each community develops their own. We never want any problems.
Rodney, thank you so much for spending time with us again, and a very happy New Year and happy seasonal greetings to you and your staff.
Good to be here.
We appreciate that. Rail safety issues in Wisconsin with Rodney Kroonen, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Rails. You can reach him by email if you have a question or a comment. Rodney.Kroonen, that's K-R-E-U-N-E-N, at psc.state.wi.us. And if you'd like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. You're asking for programs 1226 F and G. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.